one question.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Do you feel him? Do you feel him, sir?
I don't know if I know this reference well. What is this?
Well, come on, Lucas. I mean, maybe we should. I mean, it's clear to me because, you know, we follow each other on social media. We're each other's friends. But maybe we should make it clear. Lucas, yeet or no yeet?
Ah, I see. Well, I am firmly in the yeet camp. The yeet, no yeet dichotomy. I am fresh back from WrestleMania.
Yeah.
My first WrestleMania ever. And what some are saying, not to bore the non-wrestling fans in the listenership, some are saying is the greatest WrestleMania of all time, which, you know, they do have a flair for the hyperbolic in promoting their events, but it's certainly the best WrestleMania I've ever been to, and it seems like the folks at home enjoyed it as well.
It's a good start for sure. So of course you are coming back from your vacation and also some time. I was going to say abroad, but mostly in like America and elsewhere. But yeah, you went to Philadelphia. Philadelphia?
Yes.
Like Pennsylvania, certainly. Mm-hmm. Philadelphia.
WrestleMania
for
was
WrestleMania
indeed
XL.
In Philadelphia. Yeah.
Okay, for WrestleMania XL. We don't have to get into like the full breakdown here, but before you left, you were going to be seeing a non-WrestleMania show while you were there. You were also going to go to WrestleMania Night 2 on the first Sunday of April. And I think you also probably took in the sights of Philadelphia while you were there. But yeah, give us a bit of the lowdown on how the trip went.
I have to say, Philadelphia is an amazing city. I was a huge mm-hmm. fan. I like, you know, cities of the scale and kind of vibe, for lack of a better term, of Philadelphia. I feel like they have a chip on their shoulder because they're so close to New York, but they're not New York. But it's almost a good thing that they're not New York, because we went to New York right afterwards. We took the Amtrak. And listen, I'm not the only one to have this thought. It's not an original thought, but for a lowly kind of rural Canadian such as myself, we joke because we're from the city where we're from, Will, but our city's quite small. New York tends to be a little bit overwhelming, and it's like, wow, I can't really imagine living here. It's fun to visit. But Philadelphia was the opposite. Philadelphia, I was like, I could see myself living here. It was beautiful weather, great people. I loved the city. I loved the architecture. I liked walking around. And, of course, WrestleMania delivered and then some. It's crazy to say, Will, I've been loving watching professional wrestling on the television these days. It's been good stuff.
You got to see the story get finished. You got mm-hmm, to see... Mm-hmm. The battle of yeet versus no yeet. Mm-hmm. It was a good night to pick if you were gonna pick one of the two. And you also went to a Tokyo Joshi Pro Wrestling show, if I remember correctly.
That was pretty crazy. I didn't really know what to expect. I didn't know that they were gonna start with a song and dance sequence, but that was a lot of fun as well.
You had some good seats for that one. I saw your video, and it was just You were seated pretty darn well for you. I've been to Philadelphia as well for wrestling purposes. Really liked going there myself. Was it 10 years ago? No, it's 10 years ago next year. So I'm overdue for a revisit. I guess one last Philly thing. Did you get a Philly cheesesteak while you were there? And from where?
Right. Okay, so I'm glad you asked, Will. So I did indeed... get a Philly cheesesteak. Now, the people I was mm-hmm. with, I was with some Philly natives here, okay? And they actually live pretty close to, because there's two, right? There's Pat's and Gino's.
Right.
I believe we went to, I have to look at pictures of them to make sure I don't say the wrong place. So we went to Pat's, I think, at our listenership, who was ever so upset that DW became a cop, is going to be happy to hear this. Gino's has really like a Blue Lives Matter vibe to it. Like,
ooh,
they have like a, there's like a wall that's like a, like, It's like a shrine to the Philadelphia Police Department.
Oh no!
Which is like whatever. But the locals were preferred Pats, and I never really realized that a Philly cheesesteak really there isn't much to it. You know, I thought there was perhaps vegetables or something. No, it's sliced steak, onions, and cheese whiz. If you're getting your classic cheesesteak with the whiz. And I, of course, did get it with the whiz because I wanted, you know, the authentic experience. Maybe it was because we walked like 47,000 steps that day, but I was expecting for it to be really hard to go down. Like, you know, our kind of local delicacy, it's equivalent to a Philly cheesesteak, is the donair. And whenever you eat a donair, you feel it in the pit of your stomach. And I was expecting that to happen with the Philly cheesesteak, but when I actually ate it, it really did hit the spot. But I think my tip is that you have to be walking around Philly for like 5 hours beforehand, because otherwise, if I had had a big meal at lunch, I probably wouldn't have been able to get it down.
Well, I'm glad you were. I feel like I went to Pat's as well. I remember we looked this up when my friends came over to watch WrestleMania, and I was like, I went to either one of those two. I'm pretty sure I went to Pat's as well. So good. I'm glad you were able to get that while you were there. And I'm glad that you had a good time. We've just been holding it down over here on Elwood City Limits, the Episodic Arthur podcast. So happy to be getting back into this with you. And of course, Lucas, I don't like to do the emails without you. So I've been holding on to a few of them. Ooh. And thank you to everyone who sent in emails at elwoodcitylimits@gmail.com for being so patient. I wanted to make sure that Lucas was here before we got into it. So our first email comes from Oscar Vest. Hey guys, hope y'all have been well. Just wanted to say that the most recent episode hits all kinds of ways for me. Not only did it remind me of reading the funnies at my maternal grandmother's house every Sunday, and my paternal grandmother's love of using them to wrap birthday and Christmas presents. Ah, yes. But I empathize with Lucas's struggles with shoelaces. As someone who was born with abysmal hand-eye coordination, I still have issue with tying laces. No matter how tightly I tie them, they come undone almost immediately, and it takes me longer than most people because I have to fiddle with the laces to get them to cooperate with my fingers. So I am a nearly 30-year-old professional with 2 degrees, and I have to wear slip-ons or Velcro shoes like a 5-year-old to prevent falling on my face on the regular. Best decision I've ever made. So you're not alone in being stymied with shoelaces, Lucas.
Well, and I'd like, for the record, just to prove that I'm better than our listeners. No, I'm just kidding. I have since conquered my shoelace issues. It's just that I was a late bloomer vis-a-vis learning how to tie my shoes.
P.S. Quick note on the VeggieTales episode. This is our VeggieTales episode for the kids, our Patreon exclusive podcast. If I may talk theology and be special interesty for a second. What is this show without special interests? I'm actually a member, well, almost. I technically become a member in a week as of this writing. So Oscar's a member now of a branch of the Presbyterian Church, which was founded by John Calvin, the man behind predestination, which was brought up in the episode. I think there's more than a couple of instances of Lucas and I softly bagging on Calvinism. Though I would clarify that, although in school the idea is generally that God already picked who goes where, more modern usages tend to frame it as the decision is ultimately not ours but God's. So don't spend too much time on that and focus more on loving God and loving your neighbor, and it'll all come out in the wash. Anyway, great episode as always. Feel free to read all or part of this on the pod. Thank you, Oscar. Again, we mainly joke out of ignorance when it comes to that sort of thing.
Though I think my reference point for Calvinism is like interviews with Paul Schrader. So I am far from a theology expert. Though I did learn recently that Lucy Maud Montgomery's husband was a Calvinist preacher who was depressed because he was convinced he was not one of God's chosen few. And it wasn't. Judging by Lucy Maud Montgomery's journals, an unhappy marriage. But I don't know if that has to do with his Calvinism and more so his overall character.
That is rough stuff, man. This next one's from Pav. Hi, guys. It's been a long time. I'm looking to start posting on my Arthur Instagram page again soon. I'm the person that asked the Hollywood Hogan question last year. I wanted to say that my favorite character in Arthur is Francine's father. He works in a job that is very demanding and lives in a cramped apartment compared to the other families in Arthur. He has no male companion in his home or outside, but he is the happiest person on Arthur. He is always smiling. He's an example of someone who is always happy despite his circumstances. I do feel an episode on men's mental health should center around him if Arthur ever returned, but also an episode about him being grateful for the tiniest of things. Lucas, we've said this before. I think Oliver Frensky is drastically underutilized in the grand scheme of Arthur, especially like nowadays in a lot of in some children's cartoons that we have talked about and even made fun about at times. The parents and the parental figures can be just as important characters as the kids themselves.
Well, for us, I think they're the most compelling characters because we have a lot more in our day-to-day lives that can relate to them. It's one of the reasons why I always talk about the Blizzard, because they make great uses of the adult characters in that episode. And you're so right. I've actually been, I'm ashamed to admit this, Will, I've been looking at some Reddit lately. I know. You'd think I have too much time on my hands. But so I've been trolling the Arthur subreddit, and I noticed this exact take recently. People were talking about Oliver Frensky being underutilized.
Okay, so we're not alone. And I mean, he really sticks out, especially in the early seasons of the show, and then eventually he kind of takes a back seat. But hey, if there's ever new Arthur content out there, we can always hope. Next one is from Caleb. Hi, Will, Lucas, and Mike. You guys have reached the point in Arthur where I was no longer watching new episodes regularly due to not liking the change in style. I've been watching along with you guys, and I'm happy to say that I've been enjoying some of these episodes quite a bit. I got a laugh out of the reference to The Wind in the Willows in He Said, He Said, due to it being one of my favorite books. I'm currently in the process of reading all of the various unofficial sequels written by different authors, and there is some very weird animal hierarchy stuff in all of the books. What takes the cake is a sequence in the original where Mr. Toad eats a soup containing rabbit, despite the fact that some of his neighbors are rabbits. I'll make sure to check out the stop-motion version Will mentioned. Yeah, the stop-motion version, again, there's a great What a Cartoon podcast episode about it there, and it's you can just find it on YouTube. It's, you know, like, I'm not going to over-promise or something. It's very charming. In honor of WrestleMania season, I have a very strange question for you. Who are the Arthur equivalents of all current and former members of the Bloodline?
Ooh.
I'd have to say that Jimmy and Jay are the Tibble twins. Sami Zayn is Buster due to the episode where Buster tried to impress the cool kids. And Paul Heyman is Ed Crosswire. Have a wonderful kind of day. So, I mean, the Tibble twins, Jimmy and Jay, are a bit of a layup, I think.
I think Buster is the perfect Sami Zayn as well. Those are both great options. I think the brain is probably Paul Heyman.
I kind of like what they're saying here. I like what Caleb is saying about Ed Crosswire being Paul Heyman. He's the huckstery side of Paul Heyman.
I guess Arthur is the tribal chief.
Yeah, I don't think he's got the confidence for that. That's the thing. So I mean, who we've got left over? We've got Roman Reigns, Solo Sikoa, and now we've got Tama Tonga, who we don't know too much about. I would say Binky is Solo Sikoa.
Yeah, a bully, you know, mm-hmm. kind of a high.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what? I think DW is Roman Reigns.
There you go, baby.
I think, you know, if you think about what wrestler has inspired the most controversy and vitriol.
Yes.
And if you think about who's been, much to people's chagrin, overbooked or pushed, I think we have to give it to DW. DW is Roman Reigns.
You can't spell acknowledge me without DW. And that's fantastic. I love that. And then Tama Tonga only just got here. That's a little bit harder to do. So we'll have to wait and see in that one. But excellent. I like the way that panned out. And then from JHC, this is our last email. Hey, Will and Lucas, it's been a minute since I've emailed. I've been very busy lately working on my thesis project. And while you may have not been hearing from me, I've been replaying ECL diligently while pulling long hours in the studio. By the time you receive this, I will have finished the installation and presented my work to the public. Although it feels great to be finished with the physical piece itself, I've still got to write my written thesis, so I've got to be careful to keep on track of that. The whole process has had me chatting with various people in my life about art, so I thought I'd pass along similar questions to you. So, these questions: what are your thoughts on art? Do you go to galleries or museums often? Have you ever encountered a piece that made you think or made you feel? Thanks so much for reading and hope you're doing well. So, Lucas, not at all a broad question, but Thoughts on art?
Art. It's funny. This is actually a very fresh topic in my head because I just finished reading the John Berger book, Ways of Seeing, which is kind of like an introduction to art history. And he's kind of recontextualizing kind of classic pieces of art history with kind of a modern lens, and how they kind of, especially like kind of the Western European canon, and he's sort of doing a kind of a takedown on the Western European canon and the gaze in which it imparts. And I thought it was fascinating. I thought it was one of the best books I've read in recent years. And so it kind of got me down a rabbit hole of exploring art history a little bit. I'm trying to think, you know, favorite paintings off the top of my head, because I obviously want to say something smart and highfalutin. Oh, okay, here's one. Let me just look up the guy's name real quick if you have a anything, Will.
Sure. I mean, really, I like to think I'm a supporter of art, but I'm woefully undereducated on it. We do have a nice art gallery here where we live, but it's been a long time since I've been there, and it's, you know, I just... it's one of those things that I wish I had more time to dive more into, but I just feel like I don't have a lot of time these days.
Okay.
Yeah, go for it.
Well, one thing is I recommend the art gallery is free on Thursdays, which is always nice. So speaking of the art gallery, there is a Canadian Heritage Minute. And for those of you who don't know, look up the Canadian Heritage Minutes. They're like public service announcements made by the Canadian government.
We talk yeah. about them at least once a year.
And there's a one I particularly like about Paul Emile Bourdois, and I'm butchering his name, but he's a Quebec artist from the mid 20th century, and he made these kind of abstract paintings, and he was a big part of the Quiet Revolution, and he had the whole manifesto and very involved in Quebec politics of the mid-20th century. I was Googling him, and one of his really famous paintings is actually at the art gallery in Halifax. And so on a Thursday, I was like, I'm just going to go check this painting out. It was the first time I'd ever got to an art gallery, and the guy's like giving me my like wristband or whatever. And he goes, is there anything you're looking for in particular? And I actually had an answer. I was like, yeah, where can I find this specific painting? And I went down and found it and stared at it for a good long while because it's pretty abstract. If you look up this guy's paintings, they really look like, I don't want to be flippant, but black splotches on white canvas that are abstract as abstract gets. But I really sat there and tried to take it in and trying to glean some sort of greater meaning from it. And that was like one of the first times I ever did something like that kind of for fun, where I was really trying to meet the painting halfway and ask myself, okay, how does this make me feel? Because I thought the history behind it was interesting, and I thought, oh, such a famous painting by such a famous artist is in our city. I owe it to myself to go check it out. So that's a recent example.
Off the top of my head, two paintings that have really stayed with me are The Scream by Edvard Munch. I remember seeing that on an Encarta CD when I was young. Kids, ask your parents what Encarta was, and just being very struck by it. It was very, very interesting and alluring to me. I also love the painting Christina's World by Andrew Wyeth. But that's just, I mean, there's some all kinds of wonderful paintings and art pieces out there. So thank you for the questions. Thank you, everybody, for those questions. ElwoodCityLimits@gmail.com. Really appreciate y'all. And we especially appreciate those of you who sign up at patreon.com/ElwoodCityLimits. Now, of course, at the beginning of April, we had an exclusive, a one-week exclusive for our patrons, and that was the latest episode of ECL Presents Arthur and Social Media, where I got to talk with Kathleen Cusacks, who runs the Arthur social media accounts, as well as other PBS Kids shows. It was a really great conversation. It's now available on the free feed as well, so check it out if you haven't yet. Kathleen is awesome, and it was really interesting to learn about what it means to be the social media director for a brand like Arthur these days. So if that sounds interesting to you, and I will say also the questions in that episode came from our patrons. I asked them before I did the interview, so that's another good reason to be a patron and get on over to our Discord. Of course, we do have the latest episode of For the Kids on there, and we're going to also be having the next episode of ECL Origins very soon. Lucas, at this point, I've already announced it, but it's going to be about Dragon Ball, which is one that you and I felt very strongly we wanted to do. Given that, you know, as we've mentioned on the podcast already, Akira Toriyama passed away this year, and it's going to be a good opportunity for us to talk about something that has affected our lives in many different ways.
Yeah, I can't wait.
Yeah, we're going to be doing it really, really soon. But we want to say thank you to some of those patrons that support us, such as Caitlin Harrington Robinson and William Moore, Sierra S. and Michelle Gibson, Lily W. and Owen. Thank you to Kevizard Edits and JHC, who also emailed us. Thank you to Emmy the Ghost and Kelly Corbett and Alex K. Thank you to Jeffrey Norris and to Alicia. Thank you to Ashley Hollingsworth. And we want to say thank you to our new patrons. That would be CJ, Biblio, Tara, and Zach. Welcome to the Patreon. Hope you enjoy yourselves. Hope you enjoy the Discord and all the cool stuff you get over there. And that new ECL Origins will be coming at you pretty soon. You know what, Lucas? I made a bit of an error, and I apologize for this. There's one big piece of Arthur news that has come out in our, you know, quote-unquote absence. Of course, Hannah and I were here for the last episode, but we weren't able to talk about this because it hadn't been released yet. The new Arthur Digital short.
Whoa, I didn't see this. I didn't get a chance. Did you watch
this? Yeah, no, I apologize. I will send it to you once we're done. But I did get a chance to look at this. It was pretty substantial news, and this was something that I found out when I was interviewing Kathleen, was that it was going to be featuring Michael Threets, a.k.a. Michael the Librarian, who is very social media, TikTok popular these days. It's a fun little digital short where Arthur misplaces his library card and Michael Threets is working as the Elwood City substitute librarian. It's meant to was meant to kind of promote National Library Day and National Library Week. It was really cute the way it was done. It was another one of those where the two characters are on webcam. I thought Michael is a perfect fit for this, obviously, with him being a huge advocate for libraries. And yeah, it's nice to see new Arthur animated content in very close to the style that we're watching right now. It's even more modern. And so that's on social media right now. I believe it's on YouTube. It should be on all the Arthur social media channels. And definitely worth a look. Lucas, I'll send you the link when we're done, and we'll touch base about it on the next episode. But now we're going to be talking about this episode of Arthur here in season 20. We're on to Prunella's Tent of Portent. That's the name of the episode, and that is what Prunella is setting up at Elwood City's annual community picnic. It's where she's going to be giving the kids fortune telling. She's going to be telling their fortunes. And in the cold open here, as Arthur and DW are trying to blow up balloons, she accurately predicts that Arthur is going to pop a balloon, which he keeps doing. But she is right, nonetheless. So this is a Prunella and Marina episode, which we're always a little bit more welcome, a little bit warmer to these days.
Yeah, I mean, my exact note was, it's good to see Prunella. I've done a full 180 where it's like we see Prunella so infrequently. And I'm actually sad. If you go back and listen to old episodes of the show, you know, her older sister, Rubella, was public enemy number one as far as me and you were concerned. And it makes me sad that there's no possibility of seeing her anymore. But I think Prunella is a really interesting, you know, the most interesting Arthur characters are the ones that have flaws. And Prunella is uniquely flawed amongst the Arthur cast. And so it makes it feel like there's a lot of stories that we have yet to tell with her. So always happy to see her pop up.
Yeah, also in a unique position just based on her characteristics. And also the fact that she is a year older than everybody. She's more of like Binky's contemporary. She's not even in their grade, but they are friends with her nonetheless. So while Prunella has this set up, Marina is there nearby, and she made a friendship necklace for Prunella. That's so cute. I was just like, I couldn't help but go aw, because it's a little locking together heart necklace, because they're best friends. And then Prunella wants to tell Marina's fortune, but she's a little offended, Lucas, because Marina doesn't believe in her predictions. And we do have enough visual clues that Prunella is not exactly psychic. She's just kind of looking around at her surroundings and then spinning that into predictions, which are mostly kind of right, but also that old, not trick, but tactic of like, yeah, they're just vague enough that they could kind of fit whatever happens.
Yeah, they apply to anyone. The kind of B-plot, and this is a fairly simple episode, but the B-plot of this episode is that Buster is totally swindled by all this. and he has taken Prudella's predictions as gospel. And we kind of, we don't see a lot of him, but we see in this kind of initial scene just how seriously he takes this all. And it's going to prop up again later on.
A couple of visual things. First of all, speaking of Buster, we see him eating, like, a pickle on a stick. And, like, a deep-fried pickle, sure, put that on a stick. This just looks like somebody put a wooden spear through a pickle and is like, here you go.
He amongst us who has not stabbed a pickle in their pickle jar with a chopstick and just ate it like that, cast the first stone. That's what I say.
Well, okay, then I will. Well, I've never done that.
Okay, well, touche.
Would you make one of your chopsticks smell like pickle juice? Like,
and then
you
rinse it in the sink.
I don't know about that. Anyway, the other thing is that we see shots of Mr. Ratburn, who is doing the dunk tank, but he's fully clothed. So he keeps in his like standard Ratburn suit. So he keeps going into this dunk tank just in his school clothes, essentially. Like, that's an unforced error. You got to put on a wetsuit or something.
No, because then you feel like you're earning it even more. When you dunk someone who's fully clothed, it's even funnier.
But we see him get dunked like twice. It's not it's really not that hard. They get pretty close to that target.
I was thinking to myself, I feel like the Elwood City kids, they have quite a few like spring fairs. There's something.
That's
even
true.
These old Arthur episodes. What's the teacher who sings the I Like Fudge song?
Oh,
Miss Tingley? Miss
No, sorry. Mrs. It's not Mrs. No, sorry.
Is it
Mrs. Fink? It's not Mrs. Fink. It's not Miss Tingley. She's a rabbit.
Yes.
Damn it, what is her name? Oh my god.
There was a lot of early episodes with, you know, it seemed like the school was putting on fairs 24/7, and they always seemed to have kind of a fortune-telling booth.
Mrs. Sweetwater.
Mrs. Sweetwater. In the past, the fortune-telling booth was operated by Mrs. McGrady, and I wonder if Prunella has it on loan, but I've never actually seen a fortune-telling booth like this in my life. Nor have I really seen spring fairs, elementary school spring fairs, to kind of this level. The school really is well-funded or something, because they seem to be putting these on all the time.
Now, I will say this. I don't think this is a school event. This is the community picnic.
Okay,
so this is more of a...
This is still kind of... The tents and everything, these are some well-funded community picnics.
True that. Prunella, like I said, a little offended that Marina doesn't believe in her predictions, so they make a bet. Prunella says that she'll make 3 predictions and they will come true by that night. If they don't come true, Prunella will give up fortune-telling. If they do come true, Marina has to do the I'm sorry dance in front of everyone, which we never really get to see what that is.
I know, I was wondering, is that a thing, because we don't see it in the episode. Is this like a Arthur thing, or is there an I'm sorry dance?
I'm really not sure. I don't think it's a reference to a past episode, unless I'm wrong about that. But I assumed that Prunella was going to get this right, because you can't just set up the I'm sorry dance and not pay it off. But unfortunately, that's actually what happens.
Despite it not being described, or we don't even see it, it's pretty evocative. Like, whatever the I'm sorry dance is, it sounds humiliating. Like, you really don't want to be doing the I'm sorry dance.
Yeah, sort of like when you have a sitcom character do a dance like that, like the dance of joy or whatever. It really gets you thinking about what could be so embarrassing, because she has to do it in front of everyone. So by nature, yeah, you're right. It does seem to be like it would embarrass her. The predictions are that Marina will get a prize, she will get dripping wet, and that something will get lost and then found. And two of those things happen almost right away. So Marina and Prunella do the a wheelbarrow race. And then Jessica wins the race, gives Marina her cookies because she's allergic to nuts. Now, if you don't know who Jessica is, that's okay. This is the first time this character has been named. This is a longtime background character in Arthur. I think she goes back to the first season. She's a white rabbit with a purple shirt and light green pants and blonde hair. So she does have a name now. It's like all of the other background characters are finally getting names, and she gets one. And I don't think we'll see Jessica ever again. She's probably not getting an episode. But like all the other one, like the no line characters that we're not only naming but like making episodes about.
Does the sheep have a name? I feel like the sheep that's actually piloting Jessica has shown up before as well.
I don't think so. Like, I know who you're talking about. I don't think we focused on the sheep just yet. So, but I'll be all ears. But we've got like the cat with the glasses, the gray bunny, and I'm sorry, I don't remember their names off the top of my head because they're not very memorable. And then the one with the stuttering problem, was her name Maria? Yeah.
Yes.
I think her name was Maria. I don't like that we have Maria and Marina. So that's Marina getting a prize. Buster accidentally spills water on Marina, and it does drip off. It's not very much, but it drips off her, and so she is dripping wet. Marina and Prunella are having a sleepover that night, and to make the third prediction come true, Marina is looking for her half of the friendship necklace, and Prunella pockets it and then puts it somewhere else so that the third prediction technically comes true, but Marina's a little bit upset about it and won't say right away what it is. We see a little bit of them doing typical sleepover stuff, like they're watching a Henry Screever movie. They play cards, and I really liked Marina's Braille playing cards. I didn't think about that, but that has got to be totally something that really exists. And
I believe it is, yeah.
I like that detail a lot. But Marina is a bit distant, a little standoffish, and Prunella can't quite figure out why, even though she kind of knows why. That night, when they go to sleep, Prunella has a dream that she goes into the tent of a cloaked figure who has Marina's voice, and then is later revealed to me, Marina, who tells her her future in that she will lose Marina as a friend because of what she did. I did notice they make Marina's voice sound a little bit mysterious by layering it with like a deeper male voice. I'm pretty sure it's Arthur Holden, the Mr. Ratburn's voice actor.
Oh, good catch.
I think it, like, I could be wrong, but it sounds like they did the lines and then synced them together. When Prunella wakes up in the morning from her nightmare, she and Marina talk about it. Marina says that she knew that Prunella pocketed the necklace all along because when you move it around, it jingles. And so she could hear that. But Marina is, angry about it, but it forgives her and is encouraging Prunella to keep predicting, because it turns out Prunella was actually right the whole time, because what she almost lost and got back was her best friend. Aww. Prunella did earlier say that she didn't really want to, she wasn't really going to make Marina do the I'm sorry dance. That was just something funny. And the episode ends with Buster bursting into Marina's room because he's worried about a prediction that Prunella made, which is that the last bite will taste sublime, which she meant with Buster's pickle on a stick. But he's been worrying about it for the last 24 hours. So Prunella kind of Jedi mind tricks him a little bit. And she's just like, you will not worry about predictions anymore. And he's like, oh, okay, cool. And it's just like, does a little wave of the hand, little, you don't need to see his identification. And then works on the feeble-minded, I guess.
Buster's like, oh my gosh, it worked.
Yeah. As we've said before, sometimes Buster is like a little too dim-witted. And this is kind of riding the line, but it's mostly for laughs. So I don't know. I didn't have as much of a problem with it. And now a word from us kids. Speaking, Lucas, of making, the pricing that goes in, the expense that goes into making carnival booths, we see a group of second graders who are doing a class project. They're making their own carnival booths. So I wrote these all down And I'd like for us to just talk about them in kind of lightning quick fashion here. So
I also want to point out that this is in classic, classic A Word From Us Kids style. One of those ones where it very loosely has anything to do with the episode. You know, some of the words from us kids, they're really tied into the moral of the episode, which I guess the moral of this one is don't lie to your friend in interest of winning, or being a good friend is more important than winning. But instead they were like, there was a booth in this episode. We're going to be making carnival booths.
Which is a cool project, and the kids really run with it, and there's some interesting ones in there, but you're right, it is a bit surface level. But here are the booths. First off, the hair-o machine, where you go into the machine and it gets rid of your hair. I'm living the hair-o machine right now, so I don't need this done faster.
The whole dang world's the hair-o machine.
The talking animal booth with talking rabbits. Moving on.
Animal hierarchy.
The automatic swish booth, where no matter what, you can get a three-pointer in a basketball hoop.
I would be locking myself into the automatic swish booth.
That was actually kind of awesome. Like, I have not hit many free throws in my life, so I might pay like $1 to get like a swish. That was actually cool. A tent where you get a free golden retriever. Which seems more like a burden than anything else, but cool if you want to avoid the adoption system, I guess.
I mean, this one also exists. It's called Facebook Marketplace.
The amazing flying guinea pig of terror, which is not really all that scary. It's just a guinea pig on a jetpack.
That you could go look at, yeah.
Yeah. By the way, speaking of guinea pig, this class has a class pet. They have a pet guinea pig. An all-mountain roller coaster, which seems to be bigger than a booth, but I guess we'll just roll with it. You know, if you're into roller coasters, seems pretty cool. Okay, the mirror photo booth. This is some Black Mirror stuff right here, where they take a picture of you, you take the picture home, then the picture comes to life and becomes a mirror version of you. Like, that's nuts. That's actually creepy.
Is this kid reading, like, Portrait of Dorian Gray? Like, this is definitely some dark fiction at work here. But yeah, I wasn't meaning to rag on A Word From Us Kids. Having such an open-ended prompt, it just, you kind of have to admire both the creativity of the kids, and it's novel every single week, the way they repurpose the children's drawings into animation. It's been consistent now for like over a decade. It's always looks good. It's always novel. And it's kind of what makes Words From Us Kids what it is. So any opportunity for the kids to be creative.
The final two here, we've got a hot air balloon into outer space, which I thought was delightful because it's such a little kid thing to say. A hot air balloon into outer space. There's a couple problems with that, my dear, but I love the enthusiasm. And finally, the Night-O-Cell, which is a carousel that you ride at night. And this is kind of another like kid thing of like, you ride the carousel at night. It has different colors. There are horses. Some of the horses have wings. And it's like, all right, we're getting into hat on a hat territory where it's just like, also the Night-O-Cell, I kind of thought it was going to be a bit creepier, but nothing's out creeping the mirror photo booth. So good job on that, kid.
Supporting this podcast is how it keeps going, and it's very easy to do. So here's how you can do that. If you're listening to this show and want to get the full back catalog of Elwood City Limits and all of its sister shows and offshoots, you can listen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, and even more services. You can also go to our YouTube page, youtube.com/ElwoodCityLimits, for the full back catalog. If we aren't on a service you use, please let us know. You can interact with us on social media. We're on Twitter, @ECLPodcast, Instagram, @ElwoodCityLimits, and twitch.tv/ElwoodCityLimitsPod for our occasional streams. We're also on Facebook and Tumblr. Feel free to reach out to us on social media, or you can email us, and your email might be read on the show, ElwoodCityLimits@gmail.com. Finally, for exclusive content, including entire side series like For the Kids, a PBS Kids podcast, and ECL Origins, subscribe to us for as little as $1 a month at patreon.com/ElwoodCityLimits. That's all for now. Thanks a lot for listening, and now back to the show.
All right, this one, Mutiny on the Pitch. And they're talking about the soccer pitch here, which, you know, when I read it, I was like, ah, baseball. But then I'm like, oh, no, they mean something else. Of course, I've watched all of Ted Lasso. I should know what a pitch is, you know? I need to take something from that show. Nobody likes being told what to do, Lucas. Sometimes it's for a good reason, but other times... other times it's, quote, for no good reason at all. Okay, so I need to slow this down immediately. This is Arthur talking about this in the cold open. And we get a couple of examples here. So the example with when somebody tells you what to do for no good reason at all. This is Bitsy.
Right.
And she demands that before Buster goes to school, he wear a cloth mask because of the Amazonian capybara flu, mm-hmm. which she says is only in the Amazon, but you can never be too careful. And this has been made at a time in the mid 2010s, where this is ridiculous. This is like, who would wear a mask to school because they're afraid of catching a disease?
I know, this was pretty quaint. I would say, if only they knew.
And it's just unfortunate the use of the language here, which, again, I'm not, like, nobody could have known about this. It's just one of those things that as soon as March 2020 hit, it aged like milk. But it's like, sometimes wearing a mask is for no good reason at all. I'm like, geez, Arthur, like, what's next? Are you going to join the convoy? Like, come on, man. Take it down here. Anyway, it just kind of froze me in my seat watching that. It may not even be people at all who are telling you what to do. In this case, Arthur accidentally bumps DW's chatty Sally doll, who keeps asking to be hugged and this sort of thing. And the worst is when your best friend tells you what to do, which leads us into the episode because I don't mean to shock you here, Lucas, but Francine, it's a little bossy.
I mean, you say that like it's obvious, but if you had only watched the last three seasons of Arthur, you might not have known that. I feel like it's been a while since, again, we've seen Francine. First of all, I feel like we haven't seen Francine in an episode, period, in forever. The last couple Bud and LaDonna episodes,
you're right.
I feel like I kept saying, you know, this could have really been Francine. So bossy or not, happy to see her regardless. The other thing is, I liked that cold open, you know, I like Arthur kind of yelling in the void against authority. Just like the concept of being told what to do. It's very punk rock. I was thinking about this, a little bit of CanCon for you. You know the song Signs by Five Man Electrical Band?
Is that sign everywhere sign?
Yes.
And it's do like, this, don't do that. Can't you read the sign?
Exactly. That's what I was thinking about during that open montage was, yeah, you know what, Arthur? You're right. It sucks getting told what to do.
He still can reach the rebellious spirit in us. And you know, Lucas, I'm really glad that you mentioned that. I do remember you talking about Francine specifically. It's funny how her status as a character has changed so much, and I'm certain we've talked about this before, but the first thing that makes me think of is I remember in it's one of the earlier seasons, it's not the first season, but I remember there's a bit where Francine describes herself as a rude person, and it's so funny to think about how Arthur as a children's show has evolved so much to where, like, I don't think you can have a character say that about themselves and not strive to change it. You know what I mean? Like, I don't say that as a value judgment, but Francine, her original portrayal was that of being very, like, forthright to the point of, in the very early seasons, acting as like a secondary foil and bully to Arthur. But it always comes across as she's can be very aggressive. She's very confident. As she herself says, she's kind of a rude person, which are not necessarily values that you want to celebrate, but they do. I mean, we all knew people like that at various points in our childhood. So it almost feels like a more naturalistic character. And now you're right. Francine is kind of a generalized background play. Like, she's good. She likes sports. That's
right.
Kind of what she's competitive. And that's what a lot of her character boils down to. Without necessarily having a lot of thoroughly negative, like, she's very sincere. She can be a bit rude sometimes, but that's kind of in that competitive spirit. So You make a good point about that.
Well, and it's interesting you point that out. Francine's a complex character. And the thing about her kind of forthright attitude and kind of her, for lack of a better term, bossiness, and that's really what this episode is exploring, is that sometimes those people can be a means to an end and they can get the job done. So
yes,
this is a very interesting kind of exploration into that aspect of Francine's personality.
There also could be something to be said about the fact that around when this episode would have been airing and in this decade, we were beginning to lighten up on the use of the word bossiness for women and for girls, especially as quote unquote girl boss feminism was becoming a bit of a public topic around feminist ideas. So I don't know, maybe it wouldn't have been possible or even like a good idea for Francine to be labeled as bossy anymore. I'm not sure. I don't think I'm the type. I don't think I'm the person to spearhead that conversation necessarily. Well, I'd love to have it here on the show with somebody who could tell us a bit more if they're interested.
In this episode in particular, she is certainly bossing people around in the literal sense.
Absolutely.
Yes.
So she is the captain of the Lakewood soccer team, and we start off on a victory. She leads into victory against Mighty Mountain, too, which doesn't happen all the time. But everyone on the team hates Francine bossing them around, and they tell her as much. So Francine is frustrated about this because she's getting results, but nobody's having any fun. So then she gives her captaincy to Buster. It's a literal C patch. And the cutaway to Buster here from Francine is he's building a pyramid of juice boxes and then drinks from the top one. Like, great image. Loved it. So Buster gets the captaincy, which you wouldn't think would suit him very well. And overall, he's not a very decisive leader. But he is more democratic, and certainly I imagine he wants to be liked a bit more. So the first thing that he does for his first practice as captain, Binky suggests that they go home and watch cartoons, and Buster's like, all right, let's go home then, meaning that the practice is over. And so I figured we were getting to the thing of like, well, Buster's a bit too nice, and he's too democratic, so then they're going to keep losing, and then Francine's going to take the sea back. No, actually. He does a couple of good things. He, in this next game, he scores an accidental game-winning goal against Belmont. So they actually win the game by Buster heading it into the goal. In the next game, Buster plays Fern in a forward position instead of defense, which Francine objects to because Fern is always defense, and she scores a goal. And then Binky wants to play forward as well, so Buster puts him in forward, but didn't put anybody in nets. So they get scored on. They ultimately lose the game to Southside. But all the players, they all had fun. So they're not upset about it. Like, they only lost by one. And as one of them says, I think Arthur says, they only need one more win to make it to the playoffs. So they can afford to drop a game here and there, especially if they were having fun. Which is what was missing when Francine was the captain. Francine is confiding to Muffy all this time of how to, I guess, kind of show everybody that Buster is not as good a captain as her and that she deserves to be captain. So she decides to follow Buster's instructions to the letter in the next game. He makes a decree that he wants to see more passing. So he does have ideas as a captain. He wants everybody to pass four times before shooting the ball. So Francine, in the game, gets a clear shot on goal, but she follows Buster's rule and she passes it and they lose. They miss the shot and Buster benches her completely for not taking the shot, even though she was following his rules.
And to be clear, this whole time, Francine's been playing 3D chess. She's kind of trying to, she's trying to sabotage. The reason she picked Buster in the first place is that she thinks he'll be an ineffective leader and people will be begging her to come back.
Yes.
Because Buster is so incompetent. But the opposite ends up happening because people are enjoying themselves.
And he's actually not terrible.
He's kind of an idiot savant in a way. Like, his weird tactics are working out. And, you know, when he gets that header, Francine complains, oh, it's just a fluke. But it still results.
team loses to Bainbridge, which they're a little bit more upset about because that means that they have to win the next game against Mighty Mountain to make the playoffs. Even though they previously beat Mighty Mountain, they're still a hill to overcome. And it's not an easy thing to necessarily do. When Buster benches Francine, he tells her to go to the penalty box. And then Brain has to say, there is no penalty box in soccer. And so Buster tells him to build a penalty box. And Francine, you're benched.
Yes, he's gone mad with power.
Hockey reference there for this Canadian production. That night, I'm sure this isn't the first time this happened, but Buster and Francine have a shared nightmare, which, honestly, I kind of wish we did a little bit more. I just kind of like this idea. Sometimes I have a dream that involves a person that I know in real life, and I wonder if we had the same dream. If we saw each other on different sides of the same sleep cycle. Anyway, this shared nightmare they have is all about their individual anxieties. So Francine is trying to play soccer, but everybody is calling her bossy. And meanwhile, Buster is getting chased by a gigantic, monstrous version of the Captain C that has teeth, and that's his nightmare. So the team collectively comes together. The team without Buster and Francine come together, and they weigh the pros and cons of both as captain, which is pretty much what we've already seen, except apparently Buster has better snacks as captain. So that is a point in his favor. They collectively decide that if they want to keep winning, they need to ask Francine to be captain again, and Buster is very grateful to give this up because he can't handle the pressure of being captain. But as they go to ask Francine, she has something to say first, and she grovels for the position. She literally gets on her knees and begs and says that she'll do anything to be captain again, which they were a little bit worried about. The, you know, Arthur and Muffy and Buster go to tell her this, and they were worried that if they ask her to come back, that it'll make them look weak and she'll actually be like worse to them, because they realize they need her. So now Francine is in the position of weakness. The only thing I wanted to note is that I thought Francine's hands looked really weird when they were folded together.
Ooh, I didn't notice this.
I'm sure it's hard to do that drawing. But yeah, I took a screenshot of it, actually. Okay. I'll send it to you here in the chat. But yeah, just I thought that her hands looked really strange looking when they were folded together. But again, it's just like, you know, I don't think you're not supposed to be focusing on her hands.
That does look weird.
Yeah, right. So Francine grovels for the position, and she says, I'll even have Buster be assistant captain, whatever it takes. I'll just want to be captain again. And then finally, the team wins against Mighty Mountain. Francine's back to being captain. Buster's back to being assistant captain. And a little bit of that captain forthrightness is rubbing off on him a little bit. But we all's well that ends well. It seems like Lakewood is going to the playoffs here. And that's it. Like, that's the end of the episode there. Let's take it back to Prunella's Tent of Portent. As you said, Lucas, we are quite a bit kinder to Prunella than certainly we were in the beginning. And I'm pleased that she's still getting spotlight episodes. But what do you think about this one?
I enjoyed this one. I will say that sometimes, Will, the circumstances of the watch influences the watch greatly. If I'm tired or I had a long day of work, I could be particularly cruel to some episodes, maybe even some this season. If you go back and listen, you can kind of tell whenever I'm in a bad mood. And after 2 weeks with no Arthur, I was just happy to see all my pals. And so this is definitely not the most notable episode. Doesn't really do anything new. It's a kind of baseline moral of, you know, being right is not more important than being a good friend. Also, don't try and lie to your blind friend. That's also pretty despicable behavior of Prunella. But again, I'm just like, oh, Prunella, I remember her. I remember her being so annoying, and I'm happy to see her. So, you know, it's not the most notable episode or most eventful episode, but I really enjoyed it, just being able to watch Arthur again. And so, you know, not going to make it into my top five, but I have no complaints.
Well, I don't want to speak on the identity of my top five yet, especially because we've yet to we're almost done the season, but we're not quite there yet. I did like this episode. I will say it wasn't so much for the story itself. I felt like it's one of those ones that, like, it went by really quickly, and I'm like, oh, it's done? Oh, all right. Like, everything solved itself pretty well. I really like Prunella and Marina, though. Like, I really enjoy them on screen as a double act. So it's hard for me to be too harsh on it when we get... I mean, they have a friendship necklace. It's so cute. I really enjoy that. And I love that Marina is the exception to the rule that we've said, where a lot of these characters who are introduced, who it is, especially in her case, where we're meant to learn more about a disability from... a different perspective. Marina has been consistent. Like, since she's been on the show, I'd say we see her about once a season. Every time there's a Prunella episode, it's a Prunella and Marina episode. And we have gotten to know her better as a character, and I like her. So I'm really pleased that that is still happening. The episode itself is like, if it wasn't them, I might like it a bit less, but I do like this pairing a lot. Mutiny on the Pitch, similarly, I'm just like, I thought it was... It was fine. It was fine. Like, I don't have any bad things to say about it. Again, it was a little slight. But I did like the idea that they were going with, and it did surprise me where it went. I was fully expecting this to just be, we don't like Francine as captain. Let's get Buster. We like Buster better. Oh, Buster's not as good because we like him, but he's also not a good captain. So please come back, Francine. No, actually, Buster's not bad. He's not a perfect fit, but he has some ideas. I appreciated that this didn't just sell out Buster as completely ineffectual. He's not like, I forget the name of their original coach, who was just like a, as long as you guys just had
teen,
fun. Like,
yeah.
Remember that guy? Yeah.
Former so throwaway character of the week.
Yes. So he wasn't that. Buster did have some ideas, but he didn't have, let's say, the killer instinct to take them all the way as a team. So that surprised me pleasantly a little bit. Otherwise, yeah, I don't have much to say beyond that. I thought this was fine. A couple of fun gags and visual humor. And yeah, it's fine.
I really liked Mutiny on the Pitch. When the conflict, first of all, I really liked the opening, and then when the conflict shows itself immediately, where they're like, oh, we really don't like taking all these orders from Francine, let's give Buster a try, and I'm thinking to myself, well, what, you don't like winning games? Because it's essentially a dichotomy between, okay, are you doing this for fun, or are you doing this to win? Because you really can't do both. And then, much to my surprise, the episode basically explores that exact idea. And they're not necessarily saying that what Francine was doing was wrong, but they're trying to measure kind of amongst the group and amongst the team, you know, what's more important to them. And they acknowledge that Francine's methodology is what's going to win games. But they're trying to think, okay, like, what's more important to us, winning games or having fun? So I actually thought, despite its very simple premise, this episode is kind of smarter than it initially lets on. And then they really surprised me. Clever piece of writing here. I really liked the way it wraps up, where they're coming to Francine and they're ready to beg her to come back because they've decided they'd play better with her in charge. And instead, Francine is the one with her tail between her legs, kind of humbled. And I thought that was such a clever piece of writing. And it's like, and then, you know, yeah, they make Buster the assistant captain. It does all kind of fall into place, but I think they earned it, and I like the way they got there. So I really enjoyed Mutiny on the Pitch.
Well, I'm glad you did. Yeah, I like I say, I don't have anything really bad to say about the episode. I didn't love it either. But good, I'm glad that you got more out of it than I did. Because we're coming up to the end of this season pretty soon. We've only got one more episode, and remember, that's because the Arthur seasons that we're on right now are only going to get shorter. This season that we're on, season 20, 7 episodes. The next season is also 7 episodes. And then we're getting into, like, seasons of 4, 3 episodes. So before you know it, you know, we're going to reach the end of Arthur. But we're not there yet. We've got so much more to do. In fact, our schedule coming up in the next little bit is quite packed, you might say, because the next thing you can expect from us here on Elwood City Limits, by the way, thank you very much for listening to this episode. glad to have you here. Lucas, glad to have you back for this. I love getting the opportunity to introduce new guests and bring back new guests. I always have fun with them, but it's never quite the same without you.
Well, I'm happy to hear you say that, Will. And like I said, I was really looking forward to talking Arthur and sharing it with all of you at Hobe as well. So it's the highlight of my week in a few ways.
And coming up very soon, the next thing that we are going to get up to is our Patreon episode for the month. And as mentioned at the top, we're going to be talking about Dragon Ball. We're going to have to narrow down, Lucas, the episode of Dragon Ball, because we are going to be talking about the franchise generally, mm-hmm. but I believe we're watching an episode of Dragon Ball. That was your request. So you're going to have to let me know which one we're going to be sticking with, and good luck, because at first I was like, I want to watch Dragon Ball Z episode. And I was like, how do you narrow down a singular DBZ episode? I think it'll be a bit easier for Dragon Ball, but I'm also outside of my depth with that one, as we will talk about on the new ECL Origins, which will be coming in full for our patrons next time. And it will also be getting a preview on the free feed.
I can't wait.
Patreon.com/ElwoodCityLimits for the full thing. The next time we're talking about Arthur on Elwood City Limits, we're going to be wrapping up season 20 with the Hallway Minotaur and LaDonna's Like List. So, LaDonna episode is coming, but as I say, after that, we'll be done season 20, then we'll be getting into our top 5 for the season, and then we'll be moving on to season 21. And we're already into the spring, we're into brighter days ahead. It's going to be a hoppin' spring and a busy summer for us here at Elwood City Limits, so don't touch that dial. In fact, if you want more, of course, patreon.com/ElwoodCityLimits, but we're happy you're here no matter what. Thanks a lot for listening to this episode of Elwood City Limits. My name's Will Young, and for Lucas Mancini,
tie those laces, Barnes.
We'll see you next time.